You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
Ah, cartoons. They're what all childhoods are made of. However, we all have to grow up, and one thing life teaches us is that not everything is as it seems. Cartoons included. So today we'll be uncovering some hidden truths ranging from the practical secrets of animation that will blow your mind to the peculiar reasons why The Simpsons are yellow. A sprinkling of very sinister theories and interpretations that, fair warning, may just ruin your childhood favorites forever. So stick with me as I reveal some of the craziest and darkest cartoon secrets you won't believe are true.
You're listening to
Be Amazed.
Since debuting in 1989, The Simpsons has certainly earned its place in pop culture's Hall of Fame. With a perfect mix of relatable family life moments and hilarious satire, even predicting the future at times, The Simpsons is seemingly a fountain of eternal entertainment. Needless to say, in its long-running history, a few strange mysteries have arisen with some remarkable theories attempting to explain them. For instance, the question of who Ralph Wiggum's real dad is. But Chief Wiggum is Ralph's dad, I'm sure you're exclaiming. But you just might be wrong. I mean, think about it. The two of them bear virtually no resemblance. Sure, Ralph has similar features to his mom, Sarah, such as her eyes and nose, but he seems to have inherited none of Chief Clancy's ruggedly handsome good looks. The question is, if Wiggum isn't Ralph's father, then which Springfielder is? Well, for a while now, fans have had one gentleman caller on their radar. Eddie, Chief Wiggum's colleague. And it makes sense, both he and Sarah would be naturally acquainted, not to mention that Eddie and Ralph have strikingly similar hairdos. But of course, this is all just conjecture, right? Well, until recently, yes. But in season 34, episode Lisa the Boy Scout, the show writers actually addressed the rumors.
I know Eddie is Ralph's father. Look at the hair. Look at the hair!
No, Clancy, I swear to you, it's not true.
My son's breath smells like cat food.
Okay, you got me.
So there you have it. Eddie is, in fact, Ralph's dad. Seems like Sarah has some explaining to do. But wait a moment. It turns out the clip is from an episode that, according to The Simpsons Wiki, isn't actually considered canon. Meaning it was purely a self-aware throwaway joke. So right now, the mystery seems to be officially unresolved. Fortunately, for some peace of mind by contrast, there's no denying that my dad is my dad. We're identical. By their very nature, cartoons aren't intended to be realistic. I mean, how many grand pianos have you been crushed by lately?
I spoke too soon!
But besides sky-falling pianos, there's something distinctly unrealistic about classic cartoons. Their fingers. Just take notice of your favorite cartoon characters. Chances are they only have 4 digits. There surely must be a reason for this, no? Well, around the early 20th century, when animation was still new, it was a very costly process. In fact, adjusted for inflation, Disney's 1928 7-minute short, Steamboat Willie, cost over $87,000. Now, granted, Pixar movies nowadays cost as much as $100,000 per minute of animation, but these modern flicks are way more complex and Disney has a ton more resources available now than it did back in the Steamboat Willie days. Back then, Disney animators had to be thrifty. They realized that drawing just one less finger saved a ton of time, which in turn saved heaps of moolah. This cost-effectiveness is part of the reason why classic cartoons look like, well, cartoons. Realism was just far too arduous and expensive, so characters were aesthetically simplified. Even in more recent times, animators have created similar shortcuts, such as Ursula the Octopus having only 6 tentacles instead of 8. Intriguingly, given that cartoon fingers need to be large enough to see individually, animators have also concluded that 5 fingers just don't look right. Walt Disney even said himself if Mickey Mouse had 5 fingers, his hands would look like bunches of bananas, and that's an image no one wants to imagine. But speaking of Mickey's hands, what is the deal with those gloves? What's he hiding? Hidden hand tattoos? Concealed magical ice powers? Green, rotten, infected claws from some rare rodent illness? Nope, nope, and nope. While it's possible Mickey's fingers may look all kinds of weird under those gloves, there are a few official reasons classic cartoon characters like Mickey wear white gloves. Similar to the 4-finger situation, drawing gloves was quicker and easier, which ultimately cut down costs. You see, hands present several time-consuming challenges, such as joints and nails. That's why I don't have them. Gloves, on the other hand, pun fully intended, were an easy way for animators to convey hand gestures without the need to worry about finer details. It also had to do with color. Colored TV wasn't mainstream until around the 1960s, and consequently, characters like Mickey Mouse began their life in black and white. For Mickey, a mostly black character, it made sense for him to have contrasting white hands, as they'd otherwise get lost when interacting with his black body, which can actually be seen here in Steamboat Willie, when Mickey didn't yet have gloves. In addition to that, Walt also revealed in his 1957 biography that gloves were intended to make Mickey, a rodent, look a little more human. I guess the red pants weren't quite enough. 4 fingers aside, can you spot anything that iconic cartoon characters like these 3 have in common? Yep, they each have something around their neck, which, as I'll explain, is completely intentional. In 1940, animation duo William Hanna and Joseph Barbera created what is now a cartoon icon, Tom and Jerry. By 1957, the pair formed Hanna-Barbera Studios and began churning out hit after hit. Titles included The Flintstones, Scooby-Doo, Yogi Bear, and The Jetsons, to name a few. Hanna-Barbera was going pedal to the metal, and it needed a way to streamline things, which was achieved by the unlikely addition of neck pieces. Hanna-Barbera discovered that if they added something around the neck to divide the head from the body, they could get away with animating only the head and using the same static drawing for the body when characters were stood still. Wilma and Betty's bodies are completely still, while their heads, divided by their necklaces, are the only things moving. Pretty clever, huh? There's no doubt these classic cartoonists were true masters of the phrase, "Why work harder when you can work smarter?" Part of what makes the Simpsons family so iconic is their unique design. But do you actually know why they have yellow skin and such bizarre-shaped heads? In 1985, producer James L. Brooks proposed that Matt Groening adapt his comic book strip Life in Hell for short animations to be featured on The Tracey Ullman Show. Fearing that this might entail him giving up ownership of his characters, Matt decided to create some new ones instead. The story goes that one day he was left waiting over an hour for a meeting, so he got to doodling. In that time, he claims he created the Simpsons family, which was essentially based on his own. Matt's real-life parents were called Homer and Margaret. He also had 2 little sisters, Lisa and Maggie, and an older sister called Patty. And there's an argument to be made that Matt himself is Bart. After all, no one else seems to fit that mischievous slot, and Matt wrote a novel in high school where the main character was also called Bart Simpson. Now, of course, Groening's family didn't look all that much like the Simpsons. In fact, I'd be pretty concerned if they did. So why do the Simpsons have such strange appearances, haircuts, and head shapes, even when compared to their fellow Springfield residents? Well, not only does it make them memorable to us, the audience, but it also distinguishes them from other Springfielders. They're the principal characters, and as such, they have the most exclusive design that cannot really be seen in any other characters. But the real mystery is, why are they yellow? Why aren't they normal skin color? Or why not blue or red or another arbitrary color? Well, aside from being an eye-catching color that gives the show a memorable, distinctive look, there's the fact that Bart, Lisa, and Maggie have no line to differentiate their hair from their skin. So the designers felt that yellow could kinda pass for hair and kinda pass for skin, so that's what they went with. Kinda like me. I might look bald, but I actually have a ton of hair. It's just white. Having been on our screen since 1969, Scooby-Doo has certainly earned its legendary status. And this time, it's had countless series, movies, and spin-offs, which have all added to the rich Scooby lore. And they've all been pretty darn entertaining, that recent Velma show aside, of course, but we won't mention that. But did you know the 2010 spin-off series Scooby-Doo Mystery Incorporated revealed perhaps the biggest plot twist of the entire series? In the series, it's officially revealed that Scoob is actually an Anunnaki. What's that, you say? Well, in this show, the Anunnaki are a race of extraterrestrial creatures, some of which are good, while others are pure evil and want to destroy the world. During a cosmic event known as Nibiru, which occurs every few thousand years, the barrier between the Anunnaki's world and our own grows weak, enabling them to visit Earth. Interestingly, the Anunnaki have no physical form of their own, so when they do visit Earth, they inhabit the bodies of various animals, which explains sentient ancient and mythological creatures. And one of these creatures is none other than Scooby-Doo. Yep, in the lore of the 2010 series, Scooby-Doo is literally an interdimensional alien. Zoinks! So while we might be safe to assume that our old pal Scoob is one of the good Anunnakis, we cannot be sure he's not one of the evil ones who's secretly plotting to destroy the world. He would have gotten away with it too, if it wasn't for those meddling show writers giving him a completely new and off-the-cuff origin story. Modern Disney films are loaded with Easter eggs, in the form of covert clues and references to past and upcoming movies. These are usually found lurking in the background and, to the untrained eye, go completely unnoticed. As a result of some of these Easter eggs, diehard fans often theorize that certain movies must exist within the same timeline. And to start us off, I feel a song coming on. Let it go, let it go. thank you. Anyway, if you couldn't tell, this theory centers around Frozen. This 2013 box office smash features many a secret, including a guest appearance from Rapunzel from Tangled, post-haircut, of course. But one secret is a little less easy to spot and notably darker. In the film, we see Elsa and Anna's parents go on a ship voyage where they ultimately meet their demise. But while we're led to believe that Elsa and Anna's parents died at sea, that might not be the truth. According to a popular theory, they actually washed ashore on a jungle island. There they would have a little boy and start a new life. Alas, though, they would eventually be tragically devoured by a leopard, leaving their defenseless baby orphaned. But then, in a crazy twist of fate, the baby would be raised by apes! Wait. Rewind. Isn't that just the plot of Tarzan? Meaning Tarzan is actually Elsa and Anna's brother? Yep. And while in-movie evidence of this is somewhere between scarce and non-existent, don't be too quick to assume that this is just some theory-schmeary fabricated by Redditors with too much time on their hands. It was actually shared by Chris Buck, who literally co-directed both movies. Naturally, people without lives, Disney fans, have been quick to point out that the two stories don't perfectly align, specifically in regards to character design, time period, and locations. However, Chris prefaced that this is just his personal theory and not official canon to either of the films. Still, it's pretty fun to think that Tarzan and Frozen might be connected. Just imagine. Hey, Elsa, Anna, great news! Your parents actually survived the shipwreck! Oh, but don't get too excited. They were brutally devoured by a leopard. Good news, though, you have a brother! Bad news, he was raised by apes and is currently flinging his own human waste at your dinner, yes. Yikes, let's move on.
You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep. shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
Sticking to the theme of cinema Easter eggs, A113 is perhaps one of the greatest and most exclusive ones there is. If you look close enough in almost every Pixar feature, you'll find this enigmatic code concealed in the depths of CGI. But what exactly does it mean? Well, the answer takes us back to Pixar's origins. The spirit of Pixar was cultivated by names such as John Lasseter, Pete Docter, Andrew Stanton, and Brad Bird. These folks are all alumni of the prestigious California Institute of Arts. What's more, they and many future Pixar animators all learned their craft in the same classroom, A113. It was a dingy and cramped room, mind you, but nevertheless, it was the place where Pixar would essentially be born. It's thought that Brad Bird began the fun tradition of hiding A113 in Disney films, starting with 1987's The Brave Little Toaster. The tradition continued with the development of Pixar, appearing in the studio's first feature, Toy Story. So A113 isn't some kind of covert subliminal code, but rather a nod to the studio's humble beginnings. So keep an eye out for it in the next Disney or Pixar flick you enjoy. Okay, so we've all seen Pixar's Finding Nemo. But did you know that Finding Nemo, if it were more realistically based on the real laws of nature, would be far less child-friendly? Let me paint you a picture, and fair warning, things are about to get kinda horrific. Marlin and his wife, Coral, were admiring the deep blue, when bam! Out of nowhere, a barracuda gobbled up Coral and her nest of unhatched eggs. But wait, there was one left. This ray of hope, Marlin named Nemo. With Nemo born, there was only one thing left for Marlin to do. Become a woman! And as Nemo grew into an adult fish himself, his mother Marlin suggested the unthinkable. That it was time for the two clownfish to have some children of their own. Wait, stop, cut. That might just be the worst thing I've ever had to narrate. But technically, in the wild, this is pretty much exactly how it would have gone down. You see, clownfish are sequential hermaphrodites, meaning that they are all born biologically male, but can transform to become female to meet the needs of their social hierarchy. Should the group's breeding female die, as with Coral in Finding Nemo, the former breeding male partner will change sex to replace her and mate with its own male offspring. Yikes. No wonder why Marlin was so desperate to find Nemo. Anyone got Child Protective Services number?
Lives in a pineapple under the sea.
Sorry about that. Anyway, since hitting our screens in 1999, SpongeBob SquarePants has become an icon. But it seems there might be more to the show than one silly little sponge's shenanigans. For example, did you know that the show is actually a big metaphor for environmental issues? Well, that is at least according to one theory. According to online theorists, each character personifies a different aspect of global warming and wider societal issues. Let me explain. SpongeBob, who resembles a human-made kitchen sponge more than the naturally occurring sponges of the sea, represents sea pollution. Meanwhile, Patrick, SpongeBob's incredibly stupid friend,
is mayonnaise an instrument?
He is said to represent society's obliviousness to what's going on in terms of climate change and pollution. After all, he literally and metaphorically lives under a rock. Meanwhile, money-hungry Mr. Krabs is an embodiment of the big corporations, aka the main culprits of pollution.
Hello, I like money.
And finally, perhaps the most relatable SpongeBob character, Squidward.
Oh, please, I have no soul.
This misunderstood cultural fiend is thought to represent liberalism. What with his artistic passions and enlightenment often ignored, if not ridiculed, leaving him forced to work for a corporation he dislikes.
Hang in there, Squidward. It's all part of the job.
While this socio-political and ecological commentary is all just theory and not part of the show's canon, there are other hints in the show that might actually corroborate this. For example, just take a look at the houses in Bikini Bottom. I mean, what exactly are they? Well, some say they look a lot like car mufflers, potentially meaning that Bikini Bottom is so polluted that its residents have no option but to live in human trash. Do you think any of this checks out? The question I'm sure is on everyone's mind is, why does SpongeBob live in a pineapple? Well, show creator the late Steven Hillenburg explained that while things in the show might often seem random, everything is quite thought out. For instance, much of the visual imagery is inspired by Hawaiian and Polynesian culture, and lo and behold, pineapples are often a recurring motif in these cultures' art and fabrics. But besides that, Steven also explained how he thought SpongeBob would simply like the smell of a pineapple. I mean, I get it. In the same vein, I'd like to live in a pot of Wendy's chili. Moving over to Squidward's humble abode, we can see how he lives in what looks to be one of the famed Easter Island head statues. How one of those ended up under the sea remains a mystery. But what is interesting is that Squidward's home probably has a secret underground body. You see, while they're often referred to as just heads, the Easter Island statues actually have buried torsos, meaning our pal Squidward probably has a pretty gnarly basement. Though of all the real estate in Bikini Bottom, the Krusty Krab is not just odd, it's disturbing. While it might be the town's favorite fast food joint, the Krusty Krab conceals a dark secret. Yep, it's a crab trap. But wait, why would Mr. Krabs, a crab himself, set up shop in a crab trap? Well, that's where things get twisted. For over 20 years now, Plankton and fans alike have yearned to know the Krabby Patty's secret formula. And after being reportedly released on Nick.com only to later be removed, the recipe states the patty is made from, and I quote, imitation crab meat. Imitation crab meat is typically made of pulverized whitefish, which already has pretty disturbing connotations, but with the Krusty Krab literally being a crab trap, I'm not all that convinced that it's imitation and not the real thing. So is Mr. Krabs a cannibal? Well, there's not enough evidence to say for sure, and the show's producers have more recently claimed Krabby Patties are actually plant-based. But I still don't think I'd be surprised about some wildly inaccurate ingredient labeling from this money-loving crustacean, would you? Disney has been known to reuse the odd idea or two. I mean, being resurrected from the dead via acts of true love is just one of them. Sadly, no matter how many times I tried, that old Disney trick certainly didn't work on my hamster. But the point is, it's not just plot lines Disney have recycled, but actual animation too. The rumor goes that in the 1970s, when Disney movies like Robin Hood came out, the studio was broke, and recycling old animations was a cheap way to make ends meet. However, while this would have certainly saved some time from designing and planning new movement sequences, it isn't the whole truth. According to Floyd Norman, a Disney animator, the director of Robin Hood and Winnie the Pooh, Wolfgang Reitherman wanted to play it safe by using animation he knew worked. You see, after Walt died in 1966, the studio essentially lost its guiding star. And well, it showed, as Disney's profits from their animation features began to decline. What Wolfgang was doing was perhaps an attempt to recapture some of the Walt Disney magic by sticking with the old charm. This is why some films from this period feature direct copies of the studio's older animations. It's kind of like some of the nostalgia-baiting unnecessary sequels we see today, only at least these Disney movies were pretending to be original. Now, if you are a millennial or older, you might not be as familiar with this next one. Phineas and Ferb was a cartoon that first aired on the Disney Channel in 2007, with the premise being two stepbrothers who would embark on wild adventures and constructions each episode. During the series, we're never introduced to Phineas's biological dad, and while it's not an important part of the plot, it has left fans wondering who the mystery man might be. Phineas's head is distinctly triangular. In fact, if you look at both Phineas and Ferb, notice how their silhouettes reference their initials P and F. And while Phineas's triangular head is unique to him, there is one other character with a similar shaped head. Dr. Doofenshmirtz. You know, the show's villain who will stop at nothing to rule the tri-state area. Of course, the initial resemblance might not be striking, but notice how they both not only have triangular heads, but little hair sprouts from the top. Fans have even extended the theory to Candace, Phineas' sister. From her slouch and long neck to the fact that both she and Doofenshmirtz are lactose intolerant. But then again, an estimated 68% of the population also is. So I guess for now, Phineas and Candace's dad remains a long-necked triangular mystery. In the intro to the Powerpuff Girls, we're told that these superhuman gals were created in a lab made from sugar, spice, and everything nice. Not to mention the all-important Chemical X, which bestowed them their superpowers. However, behind the scenes, there was actually another source of inspiration, and it came from a Disney classic. The three Powerpuff Girls each have distinctive personalities, booted with their own trademark colors, red, blue, and green. And you know which other famous trio also share these same colors? No, not Alvin and the Chipmunks. The fairies from Sleeping Beauty. Yep, even the Powerpuff Girls' personalities overlap with those of the fairies. There's the sweet one, the energetic one, and tough one. Perhaps you could even theorize that the Sleeping Beauty fairies are the Powerpuff Girls grown up, after traveling through some kind of wacky MCU logic time portal to the medieval times. Stranger things have happened in that show. I mean, their main adversary was a talking monkey, for crying out loud. Thanks for listening to the podcast. We'll see you again next time you want to be amazed.